You know him from E! Entertainment. You know him as co-host of At the Movies, the iconic show that is on television. The franchise has gone to this gentleman over the course of the past year, co-host of the program, and he's putting his own unique stamp on this here, and one could say that he's a voice of this next generation, I think, stepping up here and putting an imprint on what it means to be a film critic these days. Again, from E! Entertainment, co-host of At the Movies, we can only be speaking of Ben Lyons. Ben, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the FDH Lounge tonight, sir.
Thank you for having me. How am I ever supposed to live up to that? You call me the voice of a generation? I mean, that's an impossible task to take on, my friend. It's very kind of you to say.
Well, you know what? I really mean that, and let's start there on that note, because I can relate to you. A lot of people can relate to you, because, quite frankly, there's a lot of us out there that look at the film critic business. I mean, I say this as a guy, look, I like John Candy movies, I like Adam Sandler movies, and I feel like a lot of film critics are kind of thumbing their noses at guys like me. I think a lot of people out there, vox populi, don't really like that. You're a guy that's coming along here, and I just want to say, too, I respect you. I think the silent majority respects you. There's a lot of haters out there that don't like the fact that somebody has a mind of their own and isn't taking an elitist kind of condescending view of people. I don't want to name any names in the business. I'm speaking in a lot of cases of local film critics, but it's refreshing to see a guy like you up there, I think, who calls it like it is and doesn't come at it from this elitist point of view.
Wow, thank you so much for saying that. I hope my mother and my grandmother are listening to that. They would be very proud. That's very kind of you to say. Look, at the end of the day, I think we're all film critics. You know, we all leave the theater and instantly have that reaction. You see it with a friend or a loved one, and you lean over on the way over to the car or the train. You say, hey, what'd you think of the movie? And you want to engage in a dialogue of conversation. I'm by no means trying to be the be-all and end-all for film criticism and conversation, and I'm just one guy, and my opinion on film is that. It's my own. It's my own opinion, and I like to share it with the world, and I like to engage in conversations. That's how I came across you guys, was, you know, being accessible and talking, and if there are people who criticize my work, so be it. When they make it personal, I don't appreciate it. You know, I criticize people's work for a living, so I never make it personal if I'm talking about an actor's performance or a director's vision for a particular project. So I would like to think that any of people who don't think those highly of me would do the same. It's not always the case, unfortunately.
Well, you deal with any unprofessionalism with a lot of grace. I really think that, and again, it's nice to see a perspective like yours out there. Let's start, I guess, on an immediate topic here tonight. As far as when
sure.
We got you slotted in for the program here tonight, we came to find out that you were at a screening here this evening. So what was it? Can we get a sneak peek of your thoughts on it?
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a new movie from one of my favorite directors, Ang Lee. It's called Taking Woodstock. It's got a really eclectic ensemble cast, Emile Hirsch and Liev Schreiber, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, all in supporting roles. It's kind of just a fun story, a coming-of-age story about how Woodstock happened and all the players who were involved in bringing together, you know, how the stars aligned for one of the great, if not the greatest, rock of all time. So a sweet film that, unfortunately, I think is going to get buried during the dog days of summer as the more promoted and marketed studio films will come crashing down upon it. But I think it's a sweet film and got some great performances from a young cast, Taking Woodstock, cool little hippie movie.
Well, that's there you go. There's a little sneak peek from you. We appreciate that. People can look for your reviews on that. In terms of the movies that are coming out, two guys that I'm a fan of, Jeremy Piven and Ed Helms from two of my favorite TV shows, and in the case of The Office, my absolute favorite TV show, The Goods. This one, to me, I'm sitting here looking at this like, I gotta go see that. I know that it might be
really
a little bit early.
I thought you were going to see Amy Adams and Meryl Streep and Julie and Julia. No, that's not for you, Nora Ephron.
Hey, Amy Adams, I think she had a tie to The Office also, so maybe I could make that happen. I should go
okay,
see
that. Okay, that's what it takes for you. If you're
yes.
on The Office, you get your $10 of the movies. I see how it is.
Exactly, yeah. I think she was the cheerleader, I think, on there back in the day. But yeah, that was... As far as the goods goes, I know it's probably a little bit early for the screenings to be out there, but I'm sure you can get a vibe from trailers and everything. What's your sense, or in terms of process, I guess this is an interesting question. Do you try not too hard not to prejudge in terms of trailers? What are your thoughts going into this, or are you trying to keep an absolute open mind?
I've always been a fan of the business and a student of the industry, and I'm interested by trailers. I enjoy trailers. I've read scripts to movies and then gone and seen them afterwards, and I can kind of separate, you know, from what's on the page and then what's on the stage, so to speak. I love reading. I love watching trailers. I'm into marketing and that whole thing. As far as the goods goes, it's from director Neil Brennan, who was Dave Chappelle's co-writer and co-collaborator on The Chappelle Show. And it's the first time we've really seen Piven in a leading role. He always comes in as a supporting character or pops up for a cameo, at least in the movies. But here he is as the lead. Of course, it's raunchy, it's crass, it's quick-witted. There's some funny comedians. Like Ken Jeong is in the movie. I've actually seen the film, and I saw the film a while ago. And there's parts of it that really work and are genuinely funny because, like I said, you've got some talented people in the mix. But at the end of the day, it's a movie about a car salesman in Temecula who's not the most likable of guys or the easiest to root for. So it kind of misses the mark for me compared to some of the other comedies that have come out this summer. I got to be honest, I was expecting far worse, but it has moments that will make you laugh, but too few and far between for me to really, really get behind it.
Okay, well, what I'd like to ask you about there, because as you're describing that character that he played, it almost sounds maybe a little Ari Gold-esque in a way, as far as aggressive, not always the most likable, maybe an anti-hero kind of a guy as far as that goes. Are there strong elements of him in that?
Oh, yeah. You know, when you play a character like that, and not only is you a character on a popular show like that, but you're constantly winning awards and going off and talking about the character, you really become synonymous with it. And even after a long career, Jeremy Piven will always be Ari Gold to a lot of people. Here there are elements of Ari Gold, the fast-talking one-liners, the quick solution, never taking no for an answer type of guy. But, you know, you gradually grow out of that mold. I think for his first performance as a leading man, it was a safe move for him to sort of take on a character like this where he felt comfortable and could see a little Ari come out in the character. But he's a talented guy and a guy who loves theater. You know, his mom's got the theater in Chicago that he grew up studying in, and he's a talented performer, and I think he'll break away from the Ari Gold connection eventually, but it's not going to happen overnight.
I want to go to that question philosophically here. I think it also relates to the small screen to a certain extent as well. Now, you're going to think I'm way out there when I say this. I'm one of like five people on planet Earth who actually liked some of the post-Seinfeld shows, the ones that Jason Alexander did and Michael Richards and even the first one that Julia Louis-Dreyfus did. I forget what it was called, but the one before this, New Adventures of Old Christine. You could kind of see elements of their characters in there. You could see it was faint in places, but you could see it. Is it a double-edged sword for people when they become so identified with a role that anything else, maybe it might be a little distracting looking for elements of that in their next performances?
Absolutely, especially when it comes to television, because you're coming into people's homes. So there's a comfort level that's established and an intimacy, and you're playing a character sometimes as many as 250 episodes, 200 times you're playing a character. So, and you're also getting locked in to play that character for 9 months out of the year. So of course there's going to be some type of natural connection that will live beyond the show's days on air. It's funny you mentioned those old Seinfeld spinoffs. I remember one of those Michael Richards shows where he had a date with a girl that evening and found out that she was a kind of girl who liked the guy with big muscles, so he went to the gym all day. And, of course, at dinner, he was silly putty because he was lifting all day. I don't know why that stood out in my mind, but like you, I kind of thought, oh, it's kind of funny. It's not so bad. Everybody's quick to jump on it and say it's terrible. But, yeah, it takes a lot for actors. You know, look at somebody like Katherine Heigl. How difficult it's been for her to sort of break away from Grey's Anatomy while respecting what made you a big star. George Clooney obviously did it successfully. Jason Bateman has experienced that recently with Arrested Development and now going on and having a career as a movie star. But yeah, everybody's not, honestly, that's from working on the E! Channel, that's one thing I've really noticed in my time of interviewing actors and preparing for doing the research. everybody's career is different, and everybody has moves that make sense on paper, or at the time a director was really in demand, so you wanted to work with them, and boom, it just doesn't come together, and you have to go back to the drawing board. Everybody's got a different story, and everybody's one role away. Everybody's a performance like Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler for completely getting a clean slate and redeeming themselves in a lot of ways. So it's an amazing industry and how one performance can really lead to the next.
Well, you right there toward the end kind of segued into, I was going to ask you something else, I'll come back to that in a second, but you segued into something. Our producer, Steve Cervillo, who got you a book tonight, and we're very grateful to Steve for that. He wanted me to ask
you. Oh, boy, that's Steve's low point in the entertainment business. Steve, it's all uphill from here on. He's like, I'm fucking Ben Lyon. It's like, my God, my life's come to this.
The New York Bureau, yes. He wanted me to ask you two of the favorite movies that he and I have both watched this year. Both very, very, very indie-ish type things, and I wouldn't even say that I'm normally prone to that kind of thing, but you mentioned The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, and as a guy who loves the business of wrestling, God help me, I thought that was a fascinating movie, and also The Story of Anvil, as somebody who loves metal to a certain extent, God help me, but Sasha Gervaisi, we had him on this show, had a fascinating time talking to him, we thought that was a great movie, both of these ones here. I want to get your thoughts on these, because when you're talking indie movies in 2009, those to me are right about at the top of the list.
I mean, The Wrestler is one of the great sports films done in recent years. People don't really look at it as a sports movie. I actually had the privilege of interviewing Marissa Tomei this afternoon. And we were talking about another project she has, but inevitably The Wrestler comes up. And she says, you know, I watched it again about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and I forgot what a tender movie it is. You know, you think of it as being tough and brutal, and Mickey's getting staple gunned, and he's got those tough scenes with his daughter, but there's such a tender side to him and such a soft side to him. That made that performance in that movie really special. And funny you bring up Anvil. I'm actually in my car right now holding This Is 13, the latest from Anvil, their new album. It was in my car, buried in all my stuff. I interviewed them at the MTV Awards. Those guys, if you haven't seen this film, I implore you to check it out on DVD. I think it's out now on DVD. And those guys, you know, they take offense when people say it's like Spinal Tap, because Spinal Tap was a joke. There's nothing to joke about these guys. These guys genuinely believe they're a record away, and they genuinely believe that they're going to go out and play their music for the world, and they're great, and their enthusiasm can be applied to anything you do in your life. And if everybody approached their career with as much passion as these guys do, I think the world would be in a better place. But what a cool film. What a great story, and what guys to root for. And that's the thing with Mickey Rourke in that movie, and the guys of Anvil, despite their flaws, despite their scars, you root for them, you're pulling for them, you connect with them. And I think that's, at the end of the day, what all great stories have. You root for somebody.
Well, Ben, I tell you what, too, I don't know if you've heard this or not. I don't know how widespread this news is. I don't know to what extent we're talking about something that's a known commodity here tonight. But Anvil, as it turns out, they're going to be touring with AC/DC this summer. I just got the news tonight here. To a
that's
certain
incredible.
Extent, they've achieved their dream in that regard. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did hear that. I heard rumblings of it for a while. You know, I work with the Hard Rock Hotel in Vegas, and so I talked to all my rock guys out there. And, you know, it's crazy, man. The power of film can really achieve anything. And you have a story like Anvil, and it took a documentary, and it took the Sundance Film Festival and the film community to help them achieve their goals and their dreams. That's amazing. But hearing stories like that just bring a huge smile to my face. That's all.
It is remarkable. In terms of the overall summer landscape here, I'd like to get kind of a macro view from you on what you think some of the biggest stories have been, whether they be box office, whether they be critical, whether they be hits, whether they be flops. We're only at about the two-thirds point, I guess you'd say, of summer 2009.
Sure.
But as the tableau is kind of being written right now, what are the most noteworthy things jumping out at you?
Well, people are going to the movies, first and foremost, despite a tough time with the economy and people now using the internet more and staying at home to watch their beautiful plasma flat-screen TVs or listen to your radio show at home instead of go to the movies. People are actually going to the theater and spending money. So I think that's important for Hollywood. I think that some of the biggest stories of the summer are movies that came in kind of under the radar, so to speak. Obviously, The Hangover. a film with no big box office stars, a budget of around $37 million, a director who didn't get paid up front and said, I'll take some of the proceeds. And it's getting up to about $250 million here in the States, still in the top 10, you know, 7 or 8 weeks after release. And then obviously Star Trek wasn't under the radar, but it wasn't a sequel like a traditional sense, like a Terminator or a Transformers. It was a reimagining, again, with no movie stars that are box office draws. Nobody knew who Chris Pine was before this. Few people did. But that film being so critically well-received as well as financially successful, I think, is the big story of the blockbusters. And then, you know, you have the every summer, with your hits, you're going to get your misses and you get your bombs. And I think Sacha Baron Cohen with Bruno really missed the mark, not only creatively, but at the box office. He had a real opportunity to capitalize on the success of Borat, and they just, nobody showed up. You know, Cameron Diaz, big movie star, kind of had a tough one with My Sister's Keeper. So there are a couple of misses along the summer, but I think the summer as a whole has been strong, not on the commercial side. I think most of the commercial films that were highly anticipated, The Proposal, Land of the Lost, Transformers, despite some of them doing successfully, weren't really well received. I think the indie films that have come out this summer, the smaller films, have been simply incredible. From The Hurt Locker, which will probably get nominated for Best Picture, to Away We Go and 500 Days of Summer, which are some of the best romantic comedies in recent years, to a character-driven film like Moon, with a great performance from Sam Rockwell. I think it's been a really strong summer for indies and for those off-the-beaten kind of path films, while the studio fare has been kind of uninspired.
Two things jumped out at me from what you said there. One, Sacha Baron Cohen now has Hamas after his ass after that movie, so good luck with that one. Number two, Ed Helms in Hangover. Me being the office mark that I am, that's what I attribute the greatness of that to. See, everything ties back to The Office in some way.
I say John Krasinski in Away We Go.
Yeah.
You know?
Another great one there.
Man, it's amazing. And you're talking about being typecast on TV and films. He's done a nice job of continuing to do his work on The Office and be Jim. But he worked with George Clooney in the football movie. He worked this year, you know, with Maya Rudolph in Away We Go. So he's branching out as well. And Ed Helms, boy, who thought that he would make Steve Carell kind of yesterday's news in a lot of way, you know?
He's great. I love his stuff in any regard. Yeah, I mean, it just shows you the ensemble that they have there. The one other question that we wanted to get in here tonight with you, Ben, was to get your perspective on the Academy, and maybe this came as maybe it was unexpected, I guess, to people like me who don't follow this on a day-to-day basis. Maybe it wasn't unexpected to you. Expanding the Best Picture category from 5 to 10 next year. There will be 10 candidates for this one, so that's going to make it even more wide open as far as trying to guess a winner. What are your thoughts on that, pros or cons? Were you surprised that ended up being the final decision on their part? What did you think of that overall?
You know what? The jury's out. We'll see how it shakes out this year. My initial reaction, however, was that it takes away from some of the prestige of being a Best Picture nominee. There was always that sixth film that was left out, and now there's going to be an 11th film that's left out. I think that I respect the Academy for saying we want to expand to 10, and we're going to make it 10, while the Golden Globes often says we're 5, but this year we're going to have 7, and in this category we're going to have 6, and here there's going to be a tie, and, you know, that kind of stuff I don't appreciate. But, you know, the Broadcast Film Critics Association, which kicks off the award show season every year, which I'm a member of, does 10 films. And I think that makes sense for that award show because it's the critics, and critics are known for their top 10 list. The Academy, however, it's the biggest of them all. Despite numbers being down in the television ratings, it's still the most prestigious. It's still the one that counts the most. That should be 5 films. I think by opening it up to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, kind of maybe the intentions are miscued. I don't want it to be nominations for, well, maybe more people will watch the broadcast if we nominate this type of movie. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think people want to watch the broadcast to see their favorite movie stars on the red carpet and to watch the Oscars and for those moments when you have all the previous winners come up on stage and list the nominees of the new actors this year. I think those moments are what people watch the Oscars for. And if you look at the previous Best Picture winners, they're saying, well, they're calling it the Dark Knight rule here, saying, oh, films like The Dark Knight or Harry Potter might get nominated for Best Picture, and then people will watch the show. I don't think that's the case. You look at the last couple winners, The Departed, Slumdog Millionaire, Benjamin Button didn't win, but it was a nominee. All these movies have made over $100 million at the box office eventually. People go and see them, and being a Best Picture nominee propels a movie like Slumdog in a lot of circles. So, I don't know. I hope it's with the right intention to honor more films and not to try to trick people into watching the show.
Yeah, you always hope that it's for the best, no question about that. Ben,
yeah.
We always love to give our guests a chance to plug anything, of course. As we said, people can catch you on, I think, you know, the great show out there, the one that's got the really great pedigree at the movies. When you go through the last couple of decades, you are now co-host of that thing here. They can catch you on E! Entertainment Television, where you are the movie dude. There's also the Lion's Den blog that you've got on E! Online. Anything that I'm missing, please put it out there for the people.
I'm also I'm a West Coast correspondent for Good Morning America, so I'll be on this Wednesday, a week from today, on Good Morning America. Nickelodeon for My Family's Got Guts. We come back on in October, so a lot of fun stuff going on this summer, and I'm just trying to get fat and play golf and get some free time on my hands. I can't seem to find it anywhere.
Yeah, it's, you know, you sound like you're staying pretty busy, but, you know, with that being the case, that makes it all the much more so. We appreciate you taking time out for us here tonight, Ben. We appreciate your work. It'd be a pleasure to have you back on the show sometime.
Absolutely. Anytime, man. I love talking movies with you guys. You guys are big movie fans, and I appreciate all the support. It's a lot of fun. Happy to come on.
We are. Big fans, yeah. Ben. Appreciate it. You're doing great work in all the medians here. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Ben. Ben Lyons, everybody, from At the Movies, E! Entertainment Television, E! Online, Nickelodeon, Good Morning America. How's that for a number of media platforms there? You got to like that.